You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the Who's on Worst podcast, your home for scathing movie reviews on the D-Rays Bay Podcast Network. This one will probably be slightly less scathing than some of our other ire-filled debates, but it was still about a movie that was not great. So we're going to talk today about The Rookie, which seems a very fitting choice leading into the Rays home opening of the season, because it is indeed based on a true story. And joining me in discussing this, as always, is my co-host Darby Robinson, our wonderful producer Brett Rutherford, and I, of course, am Ashley McLennan. And yeah, let's throw it over to Darby to talk a little bit about what The Rookie is about.
Thank you, Ashley. And so, yeah, this is The Rookie. This is actually probably our best and probably will be our best reviewed movie on Who's on Worst.
Critically reviewed.
Yeah. Not from us. I'm not going to have a ton of great things to say, but it is an 84% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. So the critics did enjoy this movie. Let's get into the synopsis according to Rotten Tomatoes. A true story about a coach who discovers that it's never too late for dreams to come true. Jim Morris, played by Dennis Quaid, never made it out of the minor leagues before a shoulder injury ended his pitching career 12 years ago. Now, a married with children high school chemistry teacher and baseball coach in Texas, Jim's team makes a deal with him. If they win the district championship, Jim will try out with a major league organization. Disney's The Rookie.
For the first time, that's actually a really accurate summary from Rotten Tomatoes. Congratulations, Rotten
Nailed
Tomatoes.
It.
You got one right. I think from that description, it should be a punchy 90-minute movie with some cutesy comedy with him kind of playing with the team and having some, like, you know, barbs thrown back and forth with the teens, and then, you know, him trying out and doing his thing. I think there's so many issues with this movie. First, I'm just gonna like throw out some of the stuff it did right. It's beautifully filmed. Like, the cinematography is gorgeous. The acting is very capable and handled by a lot of really good, talented actors. Rachel Griffiths is in it as his wife. Dennis Quaid does a fantastic job. Brian Cox plays his like Navy hardened dad who's had to move him around. The cranky lady from the bus on speed, she, the one I'm talking about. I feel like her name should be Bev, but it's not. You know exactly who I'm talking about, though. I can see it in your face.
I do.
Plays his mom. And, you know, it's a young Angus T. Jones plays his son, who's entirely there for cute cuts to him throwing a baseball and giggling like an adorable little sprite. And they do that a lot.
They crank the precocious meter to as high as they can go without exploding the pipes.
Truly charming and adorable. It's a good, decent enough script for what words are used. There's a ton, a metric ton of filler in this movie. Like, the movie is just over 2 hours long, which, I mean, by today's standards is very normal. I feel like we're getting used to seeing 3 hour versions of the Batman, and, you know, every Marvel movie is 3.5 hours with no intermission. But this movie is from Disney, and it's a family movie geared more towards older kids and something to watch with your parents. Very like Wonderful World of Disney Sunday night viewing. Like, if any of you are old enough to remember when like Disney had like the Sunday night time slot on ABC and you would watch something with your family that night, it's very much that vibe. this movie has no right to be 2 hours long, and I'm deeply frustrated that it is, because I, off the top of my head, could give you 5 different storylines that could have been cut from this to make it shorter.
Well, you mentioned this as like kind of that Sunday evening whole family movie, and it is, you know, it's rated G. It is as chaste as you could possibly imagine a film could be.
There's subtle Christian overtones sprinkled on top of it.
It's just, yeah, but so here's my biggest issue with the film. The film is entirely competent. You know, you have a director in John Lee Hancock who has done, he can do this movie in his sleep, I think. Like, just very capable hands. The whole thing together is just like very capably done. But I think the biggest problem for me is I feel like as a kid, and you know, I did watch this when I was younger, but like, I feel like it was just the Devil Rays thing that kind of drew me in. I feel like I would be bored to tears if I showed this to a kid. And I think a teenager would also be completely checked out. Like, I don't think this movie, I think it's a movie that like your the middle-aged dad will put on for the family and they all have to watch it. It's their choice in movie night, and you're just going to endure it and it'll be fine. But yeah, you have, it's 2 hours and it's 2 hours and 7 minutes. And I feel every second of that runtime. And I think with that synopsis, you mentioned it, you have, you know, high school baseball coach in Texas, plucky team. They make a bet. You're going to try out with a major league team if we win state. Okay. Then they win state, he has to try out, and he does. You have two films. You have a high school baseball team movie, and then you have the story of this, of Jim Morris, family man, whose career, his chance at stardom passed him by. He's now getting his second shot. He's got his one shot twice, and this is now his second shot. And then it's like a whole, that's the second half of the film. So you have like a very lengthy him back in the minors and working his way up through the minors and eventually, you know, debuting in the majors and getting that call to the show. And it's like you have two very long sections and both are undercut because they both are not given, the high school section, let's start there.
Yep.
I don't think there's enough characters there. Like you have a couple of, you have four basically like characters, four actual high school kids that you're like using, you know, kind of, and the only one that really has like any lines is Jay Hernandez.
Yeah.
And like, you just don't get to know them on a personal level. You don't get to know them enough, like outside of being on the team.
What are the compelling forces driving them wanting to play baseball? Who are they outside the team? What complications are there in their life? I think really the way you're saying, like, that you're right, it is two very distinct narratives. And I think we talk about this being too long, but I think if they'd wanted to do it better, give me a 6-part Netflix show in the vein of Friday Night Lights, the TV show, not the Peter Berg movie, because I think the TV show is infinitely superior. But the same idea, you get coach, you know, like the steadfast guy in town, what ties him there, the, you know, the complicated beginnings with his family, his relationship with his wife, the way that those kids work around town. And then you can slowly build that into like them, you know, achieving their goals, winning the division, losing state. I mean, they don't show that. It's literally just a newspaper clipping after they've won the division. They lose state. That would have been a crushing blow. And like, you know, the emotions and everything of that, you don't know anything that happens to those kids after the fact. Like nothing of what happens to them once they're done.
And that's the high school part is where I think you would have kids have something interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's like you have Dennis Quaid playing who at the time I believe he's like 47.
He was 47 at the time of filming. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's 47 playing a 36-year-old. And that's like the only really character that's getting like that is obviously he is the central character.
I think the high school secretary gets more lines than some of the kids on the baseball team.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem. So like, if I'm a kid watching it, like who is my character? Like I have to just follow this middle-aged dude around. Like, I don't like though. Like if you're a kid or a teenager watching this movie, it's infinitely boring to follow a middle-aged dude and like trying to reclaim his glory days when you have these kids who are like, they're, you know, that's like their future is ahead of them. And it's, I think there's an interesting story there with him kind of having that opportunity, and like he can learn some lessons, but then he learns lessons from them. Classic, you know, family filmmaking affair. But you really need to spend more time, or at least invest in those storylines. I don't want to say I would want to cut anything, because there's also an estranged, you know, father-son relationship with Brian Cox and Dennis Quaid. And you have the whole idea of, let's start with how this movie actually starts though, because this does come in. The movie starts with a voiceover and a image of the desert, just desert for as long as the eye can see. And then two nuns walking through the desert. And I'm like, what is happening? What is this movie? Where are we going here? And it's telling a tale of these two nuns, and they like are gonna like form a town.
No, they invested in an oil prospector is what they did. And then they're like, oh, we sure got duped out of our money. That was bad. And then the priest is like, well, go pray to Saint Rita. And Saint Rita is the patron saint of, what is it? It's quite sweet. The patron saint of impossible dreams. That's what she is. And so, of course, ultimately they do find oil. The nuns are then, of course, proved right for their investment. And the town of Big Lake is founded in Texas. But yeah, I think they pre-established at that point, which I think you were getting into, the very beginnings of baseball in that town.
Yes. And the idea is eventually that that a young Jim Morris is brought there by his father, who is traveling because he's in the military, and basically they eventually end up in Big Lake, which young Jim Morris is not happy about. And then he's there for the rest of his life, basically. And he almost gets out with baseball, but then he blows out his shoulder, and he, you know, his baseball dreams are ruined, and he's back there and he's stuck there. And he's somewhat bitter about that, and still kind of very bitter towards his father about that. They're still quite embattled. All of that though, there's this, it's a very long beginning with him as a little kid, and the nun story and the parable and the whole thing. This is too much. They're doing way too much with this, because I love the idea of some supernatural in my baseball.
Yeah.
Love it. And the whole like patron saint of impossible dreams, and it's at Big Lake, and then he gets at Big Lake. It's now that spirit of that whole thing. I get it. And at the end they bring it back. And he makes his debut in Texas, and it's all like, but it's a waste. It's killing us with time when we could just be getting to the action, get more time. That all that time could be better motivated by like learning a little bit more about some of these kids, right? Like we could learn a little bit more about Whack. One of the kids that he's, you know, treating, or Rudy Bonilla, and you know, like give more time to them. We also, honestly, you can really cut down the father-son dynamics, because he's a grown ass man, and I know that you can have tough family issues for forever, but like that's not a big enough part of this story. Like he moved a lot when he was a kid because his father was in the military.
Yeah.
Big whoop. I'm sorry. Go cry about it. Like you, a lot of kids, that happens a lot. You're 36 years old. You're married. You have kids. Grow up.
He still made it to being drafted. Like, I mean, it didn't really impact his ability to get through high school, to go to college, to like be proven okay enough to get to the Brewers system. And then it was his shoulder that did him dirty, not his dad. Like, he was still good enough to go through all of that, even in Big Lake, where there was no baseball program. And I think the other thing, there's one other plot that could have been cut entirely and saved us probably a good 15 minutes of runtime. And it was the completely arbitrary getting the grass to grow on the baseball field plot, which I think was truly their idea of like a humorous interlude. But really, it was like, it was so many scenes of like the kids complaining that there was no grass. And then the guy, the janitor from the school going, I know why your grass isn't growing. And like showing him sagely that the deer are eating the seeds for 5 whole minutes. And then him going and complaining about it to his barbershop buddies. And then they're like, oh, well, give us 3 weeks. Don't ask any questions and we'll solve your problem. And then they go and collect the hair. And then they take the hair to the field. And then in the middle of the night, they're tossing hair on the ground. And that is it. That's the entire payoff for that. They put grass on the field. The grass grows. Suddenly they have grass on their baseball diamond. You could have skipped 15 minutes of my life. And you could have just had grass on that baseball field. It could have been patchy grass. They could have been like, look how nice the football field grass is. And be like, just lucky we have grass. Done. End of story. Move on. I did not need 15 minutes of old dudes throwing used hair all over a field as like hijinks.
This is also Texas. They would have just shot those deer. Like, let's be honest. This is all very elaborate, but those deer are bang, 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 done. It's over. And we're hard cut to it, some venison on the grill. And we are playing baseball and eating some venison jerky. And we're good.
If we're going to be pedantic, I don't think you're allowed to shoot nursing mothers. And those were two babies and a mom. I don't know.
I'm just saying, good old boys in Texas, there's a problem.
There's a gun for it.
We're not going to ask any questions and we're just going to look the other way. No, I agree though. Like that whole thing, the payoff is it to showcase like, you know, now he's building a program. They have grass. Like it's now they're becoming a real team, but now he's having the choice of do I leave them or not?
Yeah, but I think you get that even in watching them improve and him wrestle with the idea of going to Fort Worth. Like, it was just 15 minutes of literally watching grass grow. Like, I just, I really didn't need that in my life. And I guess that's part of it is, too, to show, like, you know, how close together the community is and the bonds that he's formed with the guy from the general store who helped him, you know, get his first glove way back in the day when he lost his. And it just, one, that leads me to one other question that little group of old men brings up. And it's one of the only things I made notes on. And I want somebody from Texas to like message me on Twitter or something and tell me if this is an actual thing. I'm at 90 feet from home. There's a scene where it's right towards the end where they're all kind of gathering as a town to like go to the big game, which we'll talk about later. But they're in the like diner, Frank's Diner restaurant, where the guy's openly smoking cigarettes. That's not my question. I'm sure that's very real. There is a giant jar of pickles sitting on the counter next to the cash register. And I desperately need to know if like warm pickles is a thing y'all do in Texas. I need to know because why?
I can actually partially answer. My wife went to UT Austin and one of her favorite things at the bars would be getting a pickleback, which is a shot of Jack.
Yeah.
The shot of pickle juice, as well as maybe getting a nice pickle. So I think pickles, barbecue, Texas, that is just I think that's just good wholesome fun right there.
Warm pickles, though.
it's not pickled eggs at least, which is also it's a bar classic.
I mean, to me, a pickle has to be cold. Like it's got to be cold because then it's crunchy, right? Like, I realize this is a segue into a completely different topic, but like it's better than the grass growing.
I would have rather them commit 15 minutes to exploring that. Than
show me Frank's pickle jar for 15 minutes. I would have had a lot more to say about that.
This film also has a hard time. I know it's G-rated, and I know it's just trying to be like very, very wholesome. But this film has a very hard time of giving me, like,
anything.
There's a lot of very low stakes to everything. So we have this art, you know, the relationship with him and his father, but it's also pretty mild. And also it's just really hard for me to take, again, a 47-year-old man and Dennis Quaid seriously, like having like pouty issues with Brian Cox.
One thing about that, and I know I told you guys this already, but it blew my mind when I looked it up, is that Dennis Quaid was 47, playing a 35-year-old, and Brian Cox, while filming this movie, was 56. So he was 9 years older than Dennis Quaid during the making of this movie. And so, like, the biggest suspension of disbelief for this entire film, truly, is believing that Dennis Quaid is 35 years old.
Beth Grant, who plays his mom, is only 5 years older than Dennis Quaid. She was 52. So,
oh my God. So her name is Beth. So I was so close with Bev. I knew she.
You were really close. Bev. You were getting there.
I feel like she must have played a Bev in something.
I'm sure she has like 175 credits.
Yeah, she's been in everything.
And still is great, great working actress.
Oh, she's one of those character actresses that's just so fabulous.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like for me, you have he needs to leave this town. So maybe he's going to get a promotion to a different school and make more money. Yep. You have dealing with the father. You have then he's going to try out for baseball. So that's, so the film has early on, Dennis Quaid decides to really throw a bit with one of the catchers.
The 42-year-old catcher of his high school baseball team?
Yes, yeah. Also, the high schoolers are also four. They were like a few years younger than Dennis Quaid. But yeah, so he throws hard. And then when he comes back, he kind of talks about that with his wife a little bit when they're drinking the reddest wine I've ever seen. It is like Kool-Aid wine. That's a hangover in a bottle right there. That is some delicious $5.
I do think they joke about it being like gas station wine, like the finest wine the gas station has.
It definitely looks like it comes from the gas station. But she's, her reaction to that is also just very strange. It's like he was like slipping, like he was like gonna fall off the wagon and the wagon was playing baseball. And There's a section of it that I totally get is when he's like trying out for the Devil Rays later on. And it is like a big life-changing thing, right? You know, you now have responsibility and we all know that minor leaguers are paid like shit. Yep. And so you cannot support your family on minor league baseball salary.
And she's a high school guidance counselor. So it's not like she's raking in the dough.
Yeah. So I get the idea of like, how do they keep the lights on? How do they feed their family on, you know, the both of their like, and he's going to be gone, you know, to all these podunk areas, traveling, trying to chase this dream. And it's like, is he just too old to be chasing this dream? I get that part, but like him just throwing the baseball hard and like getting that itch to like, I don't know. It just played so strangely like he's about to like slip up and have a drink after being sober for 20 years.
I think you're right. There could have been more of a conversation between them where she could have like hinted like, well, don't you remember how hard it was for us when your shoulder blew out and how depressed you were and how long it took us to get through that? And I just don't want to see you go through that again. And, you know, just something to indicate, I think, to the audience why she's so trepidatious about that. Like, I think you're right, because it just kind of looked like she's a bit of a buzzkill, right? Like, oh, he threw to a high school catcher real hard.
And is that also just basically what this film, again, is? I feel like this is, my wife had the same point, which is like, this is for the, like, the 45-year-old dude who peaked in high school, who's now like, I could be something if I didn't have the old ball and chain and these kids. I like, oh man, just give me another chance. And does she just become the role of like the nag who's like holding them back? Where it's like, there is a real reasonable, there's an interesting adult discussion there that could be had. But then it creates more, like that's the better stakes than he's still upset with his dad for moving around. Like, that's like, get over that. But like, yeah, you know, you and your wife have to talk about like the emotional places, maybe the depression that he had. Yeah. Like there's like, we talk about that in sports psychology a lot, is just the like severe crippling depression that sports can cause when you lose the ability to do this thing that you were once so great at, that now that's been taken away from you. And what are you as a person anymore? Yeah. And how do you recover? And so like, there's interesting stuff there. And you can still, that's still, I think, a really great family movie potential, because you can talk about the idea of like, especially if you're a young kid, like you, maybe you love sports and you're really good at that. And that's really, you're really passionate about it, but like, you have to be a well-rounded person. There has to be more to life than just that. I don't know, but like, they just completely skip over that. Like, they spend all the time on the grass, no time with the interpersonal relationship
dynamic. Well, and that's a conversation he even could have brought up with the kids. Like, the kids, when they're bugging him, they're like, what about your dream? What about this? And he's like, well, that's what they don't tell you about getting to your dream, that sometimes, you know, you lose it and this is what happens. And, you know, so I feel like that would have kind of derailed the whole reach for something bigger kind of thing. But, you know, it could have been part of a speech to somebody else. He's like, you know, I told them this whole speech about reaching for their dreams, but I, you know, was it wrong of me not to tell them what happens when you get there? And then it's not everything you hoped it would be. And all of that. I don't know. Cause the realistic part of it is that he did get drafted and he was selected for the minors, and then it just fell apart for him. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of aspects of the story that were really underdeveloped. And for a movie that's basically like the film equivalent of a Sunday afternoon, in that like it's just drawn out, like butter colored, and leaves you with absolutely no need to reflect on it further after you're done, it really misses the mark in a lot of ways. Like, I get it, it's a Disney movie. They can only dive so deep into like some of the darker aspects of things. But I think if you're going to talk about, you know, rifted families and divorce and, you know, the tribulations of not having enough money to pay the bills, I think those are serious topics. Now, you can talk a little bit about depression if you can talk about those. So,
well, I think I see this as 2 years earlier. So this movie came out in 2002. 2 years earlier, you have another Disney movie called Remember the Titans, another sports movie, which same is writer, infinitely too. Infinitely better, just amazingly better. Is it the same writer? I think it might be a different writer, but it's, you know, obviously a very different. That was Gregory Allen Howard for Remember the Titans. But like, that movie deals with very real emotions, and you have very like serious stuff, but it's still a really great, you know, PG, full family film that's with, to this day, is phenomenal. Like, one of the best sports movies of all time. So I'm like, I do give I kind of also want to give like The Rookie a lot of like leeway, being like, yeah, it's for this, but I'm like, but yeah, you know what? No, if you can do Remember the Titans, you can make this movie more meaty.
Maybe
you have Jim Morris and he didn't want to dive into that.
That's just it. Maybe what the problem is that this is a true story. It mm-hmm. is Jim Morris's story, and we don't know how much input Jim Morris had into, you know, sharing that, or what he gave up, or what he was willing to have told of his story. Maybe, and I hate to say it, maybe he was just a boring dude who grew up in Texas and got hurt and then got older and threw real hard again and played for the Rays for two seasons. And maybe that's all there is to that story.
It's very possible that this was just like, there's not a lot of meat on them bones to pick through.
And so you make it a sort of wishy-washy, feel good, you know, you hear some minor dramas that most people would be able to relate to beef up that runtime a little bit. And yeah, because he would probably be like, oh, you know, it was hard as a kid because we traveled around a lot because my dad was in the Navy. And, right, you know,
dad issues. Got it.
Hard for me to like play on any given team for any length of time and so on. And then that was it. And that was Jimmy's side of the story. And then a screenwriter's like, oh, how did I make that 40 minutes? And, you know, turned it into like the biggest turning point of his entire life was his dad not wanting him to have a baseball glove or like not caring that his got lost. And, you know, it's, I think that that's where the real problem with this is that it is somebody's real life. And the problem with real life is that it is more often than not monotonous and kind of boring and not filled with big dramatic turns. I mean, Remember the Titans is also a true story, isn't it?
Yes, but older. So there's more time had passed. So I think that's the big key. I think you might be onto something there with, you know, Jim Morris pitched in the majors with the Devil Rays. He broke through in 99. And then he also pitched again in 2000. This movie is shot, released, written, like all within like another year and a half after, and then released and 2 years post his playing career. So it's such a short period of time. Yeah, maybe you can't, when you are working with not just people that are still alive, because the people, I think a lot of the characters in the Remember the Titans, like their real life counterparts were still alive, but like you don't have a fictionalized version of that person. It is literally named Jim Morris. It's basically, it is him.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid is playing him. And he is still very much like, pretty much the same age as Dennis Quaid. Actually younger than Dennis Quaid at the time. And yeah, you have to be a little bit more sensitive probably. You're getting the rights to his film. So you can't be like, and then here you and your wife have a really big falling out. And it's like, well, I don't want to show that because we didn't.
Yeah.
And this
is like your kids are still young enough to go see this movie too, right? Like
right,
that's
right.
The other thing. So,
well, I mean, Jim Morris and his wife did divorce in 2001.
Maybe that was a lot should have been in the movie. That would have been a much more interesting conclusion.
So maybe sorry, that was Jim a very Morris. Sore subject at the time. I don't know if it was like before the release. I mean, so yeah, that's
it's before the movie came out in 2002, so it would have been before.
Yeah,
it would have been just his playing career. Yeah,
so maybe that had a factor. Like, you never know. But that sucks. They had four kids. Have four kids together, but I think that's probably part of it too, right? Like you're looking at it and you're a parent and your kids are going to go see this Disney movie about your life, and you probably don't want to like manufacture too much drama into it, right? So I think he was probably a big factor in why it's not as, you know, over the top. We don't even want over the top. I think we just wanted some more depth.
I think the other big issue that this film can have, and again, like we say this, it's like it did really well for Disney. It's well regarded. But I think the other problem is, though, like, who even remembers this movie, really?
Devil Rays fans that watched it with their parents.
Yeah. Like, this is a big, like, this is a movie that's certified fresh. It did pretty well at the time, but it's completely disappeared from the, like, social consciousness. Whereas, like, Remember the Titans last. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? Is that it's just empty calories. It's there, but it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't stick. It doesn't last. And it's just very bland. It has no flavor.
It's shredded wheat. Like, let's be real here. Like, it's
really tough.
It's not that entertaining. Like, what did I say? Because I feel like it was the most like accurate description of this movie that I could possibly imagine. I think I said that this movie is almost proud of how boring it is.
Yes.
And that's really the vibe I got from it. Like, it's long and it's pondering. Like, I think of the scene where he's stopped at the radar traffic light. Mm-hmm. That is like telling him how fast he's going on a 35 mile an hour street. And he's like, oh, I wonder if I could throw a ball real fast by this and get my actual amount, you know. And how long is that scene of him doing nothing but like gearing up and stretching and pulling the balls out? And oh, I gotta duck because somebody's driving by. And oh, I gotta stretch again. And oh, I gotta mean mug this sign. Like,
there's a lot of, by the way, that Dennis Quaid brought all of the face acting he can do to this movie. There is a ton absolutely. Of face acting.
Very like muggy, giving me real Justin Verlander vibes. Like, it was legit. But that's just it. It's just these drawn out silent sequences that give me nothing in terms of the character. Like, you could have had him throw a couple balls, you know, oh, maybe that one went 70 or maybe that one was like 60 something. And then he really tries and it gives it the 76 and he's like, oh, real bummer, walked away. And then you see the flickering light that goes, oh, it's actually 96. Har, har, har. This sign is bad at things. But that's, it just, it, I don't know, man. It just goes and plods and ponders along. And like, it's so exhausting to a point because it just, there's a good 30 or 40 extra minutes of this movie that just don't need to be there.
The hardest thing too is that this movie is at the end of the day kind of about an interesting anecdote.
Yeah.
Not that interesting a story though. Like, yes, it is, that's neat. He had given up his baseball dreams and became a teacher and a baseball, you know, coach, and then he tried out at, like, you know, not like an old for this earth age, like old mid-30s, but old for baseball, old for athletics. And then he then makes it. He doesn't make it when he's 22, but he makes it when he's 36. Neat.
It is, but yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that the real Jimmy Morris played for 21 games for the Rays, and in his second season, he had like a 1.6 something whip, and like, you know, he appeared in what, 14 total innings? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing, is that, yeah, he made it, good for him, but it's not like he made it and then brought the team to the World Series, which is kind of what's like hinted at throughout the whole movie. It's like, oh, every pitcher dreams of, you know, game seven and pitching. And that would have been the really like big moment, right? Because he's mm-hmm. like, that's what you dream about, is being called out in like game seven of the World Series. And like, if this was a fictional character, that's exactly what would happen, is that the last scene in the movie would be him called out to pitch in game seven of the World Series. And he wins the game and his whole family's there and they lose their minds.
Instead, you have every pitcher dreams of being a mop-up reliever on a 100 loss team with one of the worst bullpens possible, and you are slightly better but still pretty mediocre.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk a little bit more, I think, maybe about some of the characters, some of what didn't work. Yeah, it's a flawed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we talked a bit about some of the stuff that really didn't work in terms of the pacing and the character development. And I think some of the drama that wasn't really drama, like we're very much finger quoting drama here because it's very low stakes all across the board. But like Darby said at the beginning of this, we do kind of have two different movies here. And the first half is very much the high school aspect. And then his team does try out. I don't know if anybody noticed this, and I have to go back and watch it, but I won't. But there's the newspaper clipping right before he goes for his tryout. That's like open tryouts for Tampa Bay Devil Rays will be held on June 15th. I am 99% certain that there is a paragraph in that article about him trying out for the team. Because there's a part where it's like, oh, local Lubbock man doing something. And I remember the word Lubbock sticking out to me in that sentence. But then it didn't hold long enough because it's all written big red, you know, now it's your turn, coach. But I'm 99% sure that that fake article spoiled the fact that he was going out for that tryout.
That would be a cool meta moment, like to have that in the film.
Like it might have, yeah, it might have been an actual clipping from the time, who knows, but yeah, that was there. So then we see him off to the tryouts, and I think this kind of goes back to some of the faux drama with his wife, in that he still hasn't told her about this. He hasn't told her that the tryout is part of his arrangement with the team, which seems so low stakes. Like, oh, I made a deal with a team that if we win division, I'll try out for a Major League Baseball team. Isn't that funny? Ha ha ha. The things that will motivate teenagers. He hides it from her. He makes his kid hide it from her. He then goes, she like goes as far as to be like, oh, I'm off to work. What are you doing today? And he's like, you know, nothing much. Ha ha ha. And she's like, okay, well, take the kids with you and you go do nothing much. And so he has to haul his three children off to go to these tryouts. Three very small children, by the way. I think Angus T. Jones is the oldest among them, and he looks maybe like 6 or 7. Like he's young. They're all young. One's a baby. And so
one's a literal baby.
Literal baby. And so he's hauling these children off to this baseball tryout, and it's just like a surreal thing because he rolls up and he's one of his old buddies from when he was originally in the minors. And it's like, hey man, are you bringing some of the, you know, kids from your team for the tryout? Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, nope, it's me. And then he's a professional coach in that he coaches a high school baseball team that made it to division, made it to state. He tries out for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays wearing jeans. He tries out for a
no warm-up pitches either.
Baseball club wearing jeans.
And he has pants. He wore pants in the movie, baseball pants, as a coach.
He has them. And in his second tryout, he like where it's pouring rain and he's inexplicably throwing perfectly, even though it's pouring rain. He's wearing sweatpants at least, but like boggled my mind. He's wearing effing jeans. Jeans.
Yeah, I think that would have showcased alone to his wife that he's not serious about trying to be like actually become a baseball player. Yeah, the like tryout scene was also just like, that needed to be more fun. That needed to be way more fun. Like that's so, I also feel like there's an opportunity there where you could bring maybe like one of those high school kids. Like it could have been like, you try out and I'll try out. Like,
yeah, bring Whack like, with you or like one of the guys like that's actually pretty good. Show them what it's like to like actually try out for a major league club. I don't think any of them were seniors, which probably would have excluded them from being able to do a tryout. Because he said most of them are coming back the next season.
Which I guess is the other like low stakes drama.
But he could have brought a couple of them like, hey, Whack and Roy, why don't you come with me? You can kind of watch the kids a little, see what an actual tryout looks like so that you know what to expect. So that like motivate yourself for your own dream.
Meet some of the scouts to be like, hey, you know, they're going to be a senior next year.
Yeah, come watch our games. Yeah. We just made it to state and, you know, I'm really good. And, or have like a much more like enthused reaction from the scouts, even like shaking the gun or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, is this old man really throwing this hard? But it's just like, oh, quiet contemplation. Oh, do you see this? Oh, eyebrow raises.
So they like mentioned that he throws, you know, 98 miles per hour, 12 straight pitches. And that's what, you know, eventually they're like, hey, that's interesting. And just so you know, like, we'll probably give you a call. Not many people can throw that fast. And so then like he leaves, but then the wife comes home and Rachel Griffiths comes home and there's a message on the phone where they call and it's going to message from the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, basically like asking for another tryout.
Yeah.
And so that's when the, you know, the cat's out of the bag and, you know, the
jig is up.
And then they have the most tepid, like not an argument, just sort of like a stern Marge Simpson like groan. But that's it. Like that's like there's nothing there. That's like even that's the drama has been even sucked out of that.
He's mostly mad because before he comes home, he goes and stops at his dad's place. And or like I think it's after his other tryout, he goes and stops at his dad's place and he kind of wants the approval, right? He wants his dad to be proud of him. And his dad's like, no, now is the time for putting away childish things and being a man and stepping up and doing what is important. And he's like, oh, how dare my father say things that are probably right and true. And his wife is like, well, maybe those things are right and true. And he's like, nah, you don't support me either. Kick some dirt. And that's the extent of it. That is the entire argument. They get over it in the span of 5 minutes. The scene with the grass took longer than them resolving their big maritable fight in the entire movie. And he very incorrectly says that there is only, you can count the number of people who can throw over 98 on one hand. So sorry, you're not that special. Like, it's not a ton of people, but it's more than five.
Especially today. Like, now it's like, you better throw 98.
There, we've got a whole stable of guys throwing 98 now, my friend. You wouldn't even be special in terms of the Tampa Bay Rays anymore. So sorry, Jimmy. I did make a note about that. I was like, no, come on. It's impressive, but like, calm down.
With that minor blip resolved, he then decides to go to the minor leagues. And he's, you know, we see like the Orlando Rays like jersey. So I thought all the minor league jerseys and uniforms and stadiums all look pretty cool. I wish there was more time with that. I wish he had to learn more about like his teammates and like people he's coming up the ranks with.
I especially would have liked more of the guy that he does eventually come up with to like know, why is that guy so special? Why is he the most likely to get called up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? What makes him the Wander Franco of that team?
So there was apparently, according to IMDb, a deleted scene. So you know when they come in and Jimmy says to him, he says, you know what we get to do? We get to play baseball. Apparently there's a deleted scene in which Brooks, which was the star prospect's name, where Brooks would tell Jimmy that his dad would say that same exact line to him every day they would go and play. And to me, that's something like they kept a lot of filler in this movie. That's something that's important because it also gives Jimmy, who doesn't have that baseball relationship with his father, and he's got a young son who he's going to have that relationship with, but now he can kind of be that father figure to Brooks, who he's coming up through the minor leagues with. And we get that line, but it's not a payoff for something that happened earlier in the movie. It's just like a nice line.
I'm really sad they cut that now. That would have had way more gravitas to it if they'd kept the original part of it.
It would tie also together like Jim Morris is trying to teach like the high school kids, like he's could still be a teacher at heart. But I think the biggest issue is that the entire film doesn't give Jim Morris anything else to do besides become a baseball pitcher, like realize his dream. It's not a journey where he is trying to teach other people a lesson, like get like things along the way. It's literally just, he is trying to get his dream accomplished and it doesn't matter.
And part of what Jim Morris did in his post playing days was he wrote the book and the movie was made and he went and did like, I think a speaking tour or went out and like went to these events and was like talking about how he achieved his dream and could like how other people can achieve theirs. And that wasn't like the ending of that movie as much as I like the overall ending. That wasn't conveyed where it's like you said, he was achieving his dream. He wasn't like leaving anything behind, which could, you know, you saw his high school players at the final, at his debut. His son was at his debut, and you imagine that's inspiring to them. And you even saw some of the players on the Devil Rays that were like, oh, this is pretty cool. But it's like, what's next? Mm-hmm. You know, what's going to happen? Like, allude to something that's going to happen in his post playing days that he's going to leave behind for the people that he's inspired.
Oh, it does not do that. It literally, the end is just he played for two seasons and then he lived in Texas. The end. That's it. I wish I was being over dramatic, but that is the end cap screen. Is that he played with the Devil Rays for two seasons and then continues to live in Texas. And you get nothing of, you know, what went on beyond that. For the bad, obviously he got divorced, but also, you know, for the good that he did end up going and using that experience for beneficial things.
His story is an inspiration and he has used that to help inspire another generation of people to find your dreams.
Countless 40-year-old dudes with socks and sandals just love this man.
Just try to squeeze into their old football pads one last time. This film desperately needs a so what. So the idea of there's emotion, there's theme, but what's the so what of the story, right? So Jim Morris is older and he gets to the majors, lives a dream. Okay. So what? This film doesn't do that part. It's like, yeah, this is a neat story. The end. Instead of, this is a neat story, it really is about perseverance. And this is kind of inspired. And there was maybe some other characters that also showcased their own journey. But it's really like at the surface level of like, it is about him going to the minor leagues, making its way through the minor leagues, getting the call up and pitching in the majors. The end. And yeah, it's not like, where is the, like, you know, whack, he's applying to a college or something, or this person, like something, some other, like, so what of just not just like, this is the thing and he achieved this dream, or finding a dream of your own.
You know, the disappointment that he gives to others by missing something. Like, does he miss his son's birthday? Because they highlight his son's birthday at the beginning in an extra long scene where he goes to two different grandparents' houses. They do the whole nine yards with cake and everything. You could have easily been like a year later and like son's kind of sitting on grandpa, grandma's porch, but dad's not there this time. And like emphasize the things that are being like disappointing his family because of that. It's really, you don't get any of that.
There's not even that much in the minors section, right? Like there's like a section where he's in the minors and it's kind of going quickly and he's like, some people
call him old.
Yes. And other people are like, you're gonna be the like, you're only here because you're kind of like a sideshow. Like that's, yeah, you know, the only reason you're getting promoted, which, true.
Which I think is a fair sentiment.
It's a very fair sentiment.
The Tim Tebow factor.
You know, even though he had the fastball, like he showed some problems with command. He was getting, like, we didn't see him like dominate the minors. And I don't know what he really did. I guess we could look, but like, he didn't seem like he was like, all right, the Rays, well, first off, it was the 2001 Devil Rays. They didn't need it. I mean, they could have used all the help, but at that point in the season, it didn't really matter. But it's not like he was like burning up the minors and they had no choice but to call him up. You know, he was a September call up and they were going to throw him a bone.
Yeah, it desperately needed a so what. So we get one of the scenes that I thought was like kind of fun, that I thought really worked, just because I'm a sucker for anytime there's like a video of like a real life call up from their minors, like where they show like the scene where the coach is, you know, in the locker room and he's announcing that somebody is getting their call to the show. It literally will never fail to make me like get chills. I love it. So they have that in this movie where you get the head coach of the Durham Bulls calls in Jim Morris and talks about how we're called, you know, that I just got off the phone with the Rays or the Devil Rays. Brooks is getting the call. And, you know, like I thought, you know, you'd be, I'd like you to be the one to tell him. And, you know, Jim Morris is going through like the emotions of like, it's only, I don't know why he's so convinced that it's only one person being called up. There's like a point where that's a thing where it's like, it's usually just one, which isn't true, but he's convinced of that.
Especially not then when you could expand to 40.
Yeah, I don't know why that was there, but like he's still just like
a plot device.
But he, you know, he's getting a little emotional. Good, you know, again, Dennis Quaid's a very good actor. So he's you know, getting a little emotional, but he's holding it in like, great, great call. Brooks is super talented. He's young. He's the future. Like, you know,
good he's, guy. He's his friend.
He's like clearly crushed because he's not realizing his dream, but well, good for him. And then the coach is like, you know, I figure you should tell him because you're going with him. And he's so happy and he's going there. And then he calls the wife and there's like a great, there's a really fun scene there where he calls the wife and, you know, says like, can you bring my suit to Arlington? And then she's like, I don't know why. And he's like, yeah, there's a dress code in the major leagues. And she's happy. And like that's like super great. It's so fast during the minor league section, which the film is paced glacially, and I can't believe there's something fast, but like they kind of just like yada 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 over the entire minor league thing, which I feel like that would be the biggest struggle. That would be the most, he's away from his family. He's missing time with his son and his daughter and the baby. He's missing
they're
time.
They're struggling financially.
That's where, like, again, like the minor league part is, should he chase his dream? Like, that's the whole idea, right? Is like, it's great, the idea of like, achieve those, reach for those dreams that you had because you can achieve them. But there is the downside of like, should you chase that at to what cost, to what end?
Yeah.
And so like, there is a cool, there that's an interesting thing there, but they just kind of rushed through it. But I did think they executed that part really well. the call up and the chills of that. Yeah, that was great.
Oh, I cried. Full admission. I cried. I cried my way through that. I cried my way through him being in the bullpen and getting up to, like, you know, to warm up for the first time and getting his call to the mound, and all of the whole bloody town is there. Like, they've all shown up, inexplicably all arranging to meet at 2 p.m. in Arlington and still showing up by the bottom of the first, because, like, somehow sunset is happening, but it took them 4 hours to get into the stadium. It's very impressive.
So it's a packed house.
You know, it was packed. It was July. The Devil Rays are in town.
Yeah.
You got to get those tickets. They're going like hotcakes.
And then I romantically reminisced over the fact that the Rangers used to play in a stadium that didn't look like a barbecue warehouse. So, I mean, that was really nice. No, I mean, it's a very effective ending. Like, I think they play on the emotional beats really well. It is, you're right, Darby. It's always nice to see the call-up moment. And it's executed beautifully here. Like, it's very emotionally manipulative because you know how it's going to play out. And, like, because he's just basically told the coach that he's going to quit. He's like, you know, he's like, I'm done. This is it. You know, I'm old. This is going to be it for me. But, you know, he sticks around for a little bit because he's got 2 weeks before he has to show up for his new job. So he might as well play it out. And then all of a sudden, dun, 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 of course, here he goes. And he's got his cup of coffee. So, yeah, it's one of the most effective parts of the entire movie, if not the most effective part of the entire movie.
You then have afterwards, he pitches, he gets Royce Clayton out, which, you know, a lot of people could do that. And he, you know, has a successful, yeah, that's right, Royce Clayton. Nowhere is safe. You're just getting, catching strays years later from your career. You know, yeah, he's successful. You know, the presser talking to him, and then he sees his dad. His dad also came, which is, you know, your nice big moment, which I'm still, because, like, the entire time, I've never bought into this whole storyline. So I didn't buy in there, and it didn't really affect me emotionally. But I always like to see Brian Cox in things. So I was like, hey, more Brian Cox. Great.
He was a much better father here than he is in Succession.
But at the same time, he's kind of an ass the whole time. Got the ball.
Have you seen Succession? I've seen Succession. A much better father here than he is in Succession.
No argument there.
I did think this was a daring choice for Disney to do Boar on the Floor for the clubhouse with... It seemed like a very odd choice, but, you know, Disney really, they know what they're doing. Visionary. Oh.
No, but why did he give the ball to, like, his son or, like, one of the players that, convinced him to try out? Or his wife, who was depicted as, like, this very, like, even when she was frustrated, son, very supportive.
It makes no sense.
That's what I said, right? Yeah.
It makes no sense. Yeah.
And it's like, I get we're supposed to have this, like, father-son moment, but it's like, we didn't even get until that very scene. There wasn't even an inkling that, like, besides Brian Cox, like, getting the grandson a first baseman's mitt, there wasn't, like, an inkling of, like, he's trying to care, but he just can't understand what he's trying to do. Like, it was like, no, he doesn't. He thinks this is stupid. He thinks it's a dumb dream, and he doesn't support him. Oh, but you finally made it. Here, let me show up. Oh, now I get the game ball and I'm just going to walk away and go home.
It would have been so much more effective if it does go to the wife, because she's the one sacrificing. And so, like, it would make much more sense if that's the emotional crux of the film is over. They are together. They have been together through thick and thin. And they, like, his first chance and that long journey and it failing and then recovering and building together and their family and blah, like, that makes much more sense as the ending storyline and the beat of she supports him and they stuck it out, and, like, this ball represents all of the sacrifice that they both went through as a family together, and it goes to Brian Cox, who's like, whatever, who gives,
thanks, bye.
Yeah, or the catcher in high school. Like, it would, like you said, it would have been cool if maybe one of these players was a professional, like, prospect or, you know, a Division I prospect, something like that. Like, if we could have fleshed out the relationship instead of, like, you know, there were like two or three of the high school kids that had lines, maybe like really focus on that relationship with the catcher, because they did have some chemistry in that scene where he was throwing to him. Like, maybe you flesh it out with them. Maybe you think, like, you know, you portray this kid as maybe he has a chance at the big leagues one day, and he gives him the ball and he's like, you can do this too, or, you know, says some, maybe something less cheesy, but like, you can achieve this, and thank you for helping me, you know, get on track to get here. Because, you know, he was that catalyst to, like, get him back into playing. So, yeah, I mean, it could have gone to anybody but Brian Cox, but, you know.
It was probably the worst choice. It was the worst emotional choice.
That was my only issue at the end of the movie. But Brian, quick, like, meta baseball movie, meta who's on worst moment in For Love of the Game, Brian Cox has given the baseball for Billy Chappell's last game.
That's right.
And in this film, he was given the ball for Jim Morris's first game.
He's got a nice little collection going.
He does.
Good for him.
He's got more game-used baseballs than anybody in more dramatic history, except
fictional
for, like,
game-used
Smalls in the Sandlot.
I hope he kept them all.
He can't even keep track
when we get Brian Cox on our podcast, we'll have to ask him about that.
And one more thing on the Brian Cox baseball thing, like, from what we know about this character, I mean, there's no way he, like, knows where the ball is within, like, 2 years of this moment. Like, it's lost.
He didn't look like he owned a lot of stuff, I think. No, you know what? I'll argue against that, because he's a Navy man.
Okay.
And he would have been, like, spending most of his life, like, very diligently organized. Mm-hmm. They moved so much. He probably has a very, like, pared down lifestyle. I bet that thing goes on a mantle and never moves.
And I'll give him credit. He had the Little League pictures up on the wall.
He absolutely had two pictures of the exact same game, just slightly further away. that mom must have had like a half dozen kicking around and was like, here, you take these.
That's what he got in the divorce.
Built out those relationships so thoroughly that his brother, there's a brother, is credited as Jimmy's brother in the... actual IMDb credits of this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Never actually given a name. He is Jimmy's brother.
Doesn't come back to watch his brother pitch in the movie.
He's never ever mentioned ever again. It would have been much funnier if Brian Cox at the end is like, well, I came to your game, but, you know, your brother's been with the Yankees for the past 10 years. It's not all that special.
Seven-time All-Star, World Series MVP.
Jimmy's brother is much better than you are.
I'll try to see if I can find the room on the mantle with your single game ball for
his silver
pitching against the Texas Rangers in September.
I mean, I guess that's pretty okay for some people's kids.
What did you guys think of the baseball in this movie, like the actual film? I thought that the championship, or not the championship, the national, the state title to get to the Nationals.
The division title.
The division title was so, like, edited. So this is like a very, compared to Bad News Bears that we saw last week, it's so choppy. Like, I could not tell where I was in the game. And then it ended. And I was like, oh, that was the ending play. I thought, like, overall, people could, like, Dennis Quaid looked good. Like, he throws well lefty. And I thought the baseball that we saw was solid. But that game was, like, chopped up so quickly with the editing that I could not tell where I was in the game or what was happening.
That, and I think I know nothing about high school athletics in the U.S., so bear this with the biggest grain of salt possible. But, like, I would have thought a division championship would have had a slightly more elevated, like, feel to it than just, it was exactly like any other game of that season. Mm-hmm. It was at their little dirt field. There was a same size crowd as there usually is. I would have thought at least you would have had fans from both teams really filling that up, because it's who wins that goes to state. And, like, I know enough about high school athletics in the U.S. to know that state is a big deal.
I mean, every state does it a little differently, but yeah, it should be like a bigger deal. Sometimes it would be held on a neutral site.
A nicer field
that has, like, more grass.
And I think in Texas, there's no shortage of, like, athletic fields that could have fit the bill for that.
Yeah, I don't know what the case was in the 90s, but I know, like, Texas baseball is, you know, it's different, not as big as, like, Texas high school football, But there's plenty of funding in most Texas cities for high school baseball as well. There's a lot of talent that comes out of that state. So I don't know, maybe this one high school back in the late 90s was a little different. But yeah, that was, yeah, most times you'll have fields with grass.
That would have been my assumption too, because I think a lot of times in those schools especially, your football stars are also your baseball stars, like your multi-sport playing guys.
Everything. Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought the baseball by and large was filmed fine. Like I think aside from that game, which was a hot mess, you're absolutely right. I think, I mean, obviously Dennis Quaid wasn't throwing anything. But like
not getting 98.
He was not Brendan Fraser filmed in this. Like he looked natural. He looked like he was actually setting up. He had all the tics and idiosyncrasies that we know of from players. Like, I don't think he could have horse kicked the dirt anymore if he tried throughout the course of this movie. He dug himself a whole ditch in the process. But yeah, I don't know. Nothing stuck out to me. The weirdest thing I think was at the end after he successfully completed his first game and the reporter asks him, what pitches were those? And I'm like, my dude, if you can't recognize three straight fastballs, you should not be a baseball reporter. Like,
yeah, if that's your lead question,
what pitches were you throwing to get him out? I'm like, my dude's here. He throws 98. What do you think? What do you think he's out there doing? He's not throwing a.
That's the only reason he's at the ballpark that day.
Like, he's out there to throw 98 and nothing else. What did you throw?
Fastball.
Yeah, his news director should have a stern talking to, like, listen, man, you get these post-game scrums, you better start off with a good one. Like,
They're not coming back to you.
And he lost his interest very quickly.
And if that was my leadoff question to a player, I would never be given a press pass again. Like,
yeah. Jimmy, like, lost interest quickly, went straight to his dad. He's like, oh, yeah, see you guys.
Can't do all it. The rest of the reporters afterwards already were looking. Already, like, just turned to him, like, wrong with
it would have been much funnier too if he said fast ones and then just like walked away. Like I thought that would...
or just like giving him a stare. Like, yeah, it's like, come on, man,
come on, come on. You were watching the same game. Come on.
I did enjoy that the cinematic Tampa Bay Devil Rays threw the ball around, made some errors. That's very accurate to.
But that was real game footage.
It was, yeah, and that was kind of cool. Like I liked the. Anytime, and this is, I think, done the same way, like you film at a real stadium with the crowd and you do it in between innings, always effective. Great, great use because you can get real footage, you can get real crowds, you can get that energy and works well.
I was thinking, I'm like, okay, because, you know, you need Morris to come in like a somewhat mop-up role because that's what happened in real life. You know, that you can't dramatize it so much where he comes in for the big save, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he just comes in and pitches, you know, he gets the out. So it's like, oh, you had to make sure that you found a game that the Devil Rays were, like, losing and you get some footage of that. I'm like, oh, wait, that wasn't that hard. It was like...
Couldn't pick them all.
You had Tanyan Sturts was the starting pitcher that day who was apparently, according to Adam Sanford, or, like, resident historian... was nicknamed, instead of his name is Tanyan Sturts, he was nicknamed 10 Run Sturts because he would give up 10 runs. Ouch. And he did in that game in which they filmed, went 5 innings pitched, 10 hits allowed, 7 earned runs.
Oh.
Oh, ouch.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I don't know, guys. Do we want to pick who we would pick?
Yeah, I will say this.
Go ahead.
I will say this. I'm not going to pick mine first, but I just will say this. We should just like put it out there. Jim Morris's career numbers total, 15 innings pitched. He has a 7.8 K per nine with a 5.4 walks per nine. An ERA of 4.80 and a FIP of 5.13 for his career. So here's the thing. Not atrocious, not atrocious at all. Like, solidly below average, but like, again, for the idea, like, that's pretty darn good. Like, that's coming back, being so out of shape in terms of like baseball shape, and like years and years of not playing baseball, to come back and to be, that's better than 99.9% of people could do. So very impressive, but I don't think anybody's picking Jimmy Morris for the team, I'm guessing. But
I mean, do we have ground rules for this one?
No, because
we never do. We play it fast and loose.
Done this fast and loose the entire time. I
picked Buster Posey because he was the actor shown. He was the real player, was playing an actor in Mr. 3000, and that flew. So I feel like I have broken all the rules of this, if there were any.
My final thoughts before we jump into players is that this is, if we must find a way to applaud it, a much happier turn for a high school chemistry teacher looking for a new field of work against the better judgment of his wife and their young children than perhaps Breaking Bad.
That was my first thought when that scene of him in the chemistry classroom came on. I was like, oh, I've seen a show in which a chemistry teacher is,
yeah,
needs to change.
Breaking Ball Bad, right?
Or Breaking Bad. Right?
Breaking Ball. Oh, yes. I like that.
Anyway.
I like both of those.
I'm going to go lazy because honestly, I'm going to go with Wade Box because we saw his jersey and that is it. That is my selection. That's how I'm cheating my way into. I could have gone Canseco, but I have dignity and I'm not
going Chicken Man instead.
Chicken Man.
All right. So I'm going to take a shot in the dark at a actual, in the film, not an actual athlete, but somebody who is shown as a interesting rising prospect in the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. I don't know much about him. No, he's a position player. Would love to have seen more. I'm really going in the blind here. This is definitely like word of mouth, international scouting type of thing right now. But I will go with Brooks. Is that his first name? Is that his last name? Don't know. But it's got the call up. Could be Brooks Brooks. Who knows?
It could be Brooks Brooks.
Let's get him into the camp and see. I wanted to try one of the high school kids, but like they all looked pretty mediocre. So I'll go with Brooks and see.
The whole is greater than the sum of its parts for that Owls baseball team. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Quick tidbit, though, on Brooks. So the real-life player that was called up alongside Jim Morris was Steve Cox, who actually had a few
solid career,
you know, all right seasons with the Devil Rays. Steve Cox, in the game in which they filmed this at, homered for the Rays. So you had Jim Morris in attendance to film, or Dennis Quaid in attendance, to film some of these scenes. And Steve Cox homered in the game where they filmed a movie scene for which he was, you know, prospect buddies or minor league buddies with.
That's
with
fun.
Jim Morris. I think I will take Jim Morris because I have a feeling that Rick Williams, the Devil Rays pitching coach, you know, probably tried to have him mix in a curveball. And, you know, what does Kyle Snyder do? He picks the one pitch, maybe two pitches that you throw best, and we're going to throw that. And we're going to throw it for strikes. And so I want to see Kyle Snyder maybe for one more season. If you ask our managing editor, Danny Russell, the Rays could use another high leverage arm. You know, maybe Jim Morris with that high octane fastball can pitch in some high leverage situations. I'm not done. I am in a double dip here.
Ooh.
Because I just mentioned him, and I don't know if the current Rays are in any need of a writer or a blogger or a content creator, but I have on good authority that DRaysBay.com managing editor Danny Russell was in the crowd that night at the Rangers ballpark in Arlington.
No.
Where they filmed the game. And so I will take Danny Russell to join the Rays communication staff.
Was he serious?
Yes, he was living in Texas at the time. And he, I mean, I guess you can ask him. He was living in Texas at the time and heard they were filming.
What?
The rookie and attended the game.
When we write up all of the players and personnel that we've selected, I am very happy that we're going to have Danny Russell in that list with yes. Tammy, the catcher from Air Bud, seventh inning fetch.
And I think she remains our only unanimous pick.
But by far, that's our 10-win player right there. But yeah,
Tammy for life.
Wow, that is awesome, Brett. I did not know that.
I mean, you went with Buster Posey, who was couldn't even spot in Mr. 3000. Didn't try to
actually just went with the jersey of Wade Boggs. So I like it. Yeah,
go with the jersey of Wade Boggs. He was present in that game there. In some capacity. I'm taking what I can get here.
No, I like it. Yeah. I mean, Danny's in one of their shots, I'm sure. They showed like the whole crowd multiple
real
times.
Real tiny blurry. Amazing.
Yeah.
He should have given Danny the ball instead of his dad. That would have made far more
impact. It would have been good forever.
You will be the managing editor of a Rays fan site one day. Where's this ball?
You can achieve anything.
Yes. Dream big, Danny. Dream big. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I think that kind of concludes our general opinions of the rookie, which was a big snooze fest from beginning to end with some happy tears in the mix and some confusing feelings about Brian Cox, who I remind you again is only 9 years older than Dennis Quaid. So think of that while you're staring into the craggy depths of the weathered skin of Dennis Quaid pretending to be 35. And I don't know, I'm not going to say don't watch this movie, but like, I don't know, put it on in the background or something.
It's free on Disney Plus.
Yeah. It's.
I think you don't need to watch this movie. You just need to watch the third act.
Yeah.
To like get the feeling of this movie. Like, because I thought Dennis Quaid, like my last thought is just like that scene, he acted it so, played it so well. When he gets the news, like, you know, you could tell he's like, he's the rookie, but he's supposed to be like this grizzled veteran. He like doesn't break down into tear. He doesn't like, you know, cheer out and, you know, joy. He just kind of takes a deep breath and he goes, you know, I'm going to the big leagues.
Yeah.
Calls his son, calls his wife. That made the whole movie for me. It's a movie I would rewatch, not often, but you know, maybe every 5 years I'll be like, oh,
I think
let's watch the rookie.
If you're like, you're going to do a puzzle one afternoon and you just want something on in the background, it's a perfect movie for that. Like you're just kind of like curled up on the couch on a rainy day and there's no games on you want to watch, throw on The Rookie. You could do worse. It will not tickle your senses too much. Won't make you think too hard at all. But it also won't induce anxiety in you, which is something I find random things do to me from time to time. So that's high grades for having absolutely no anxiety factor whatsoever. Congratulations, The Rookie. I think with that, we'll wind up this episode. We are already preparing our next one, so we will not yet be taking a fan input on what movie we do next. But we will be ruining another one of your childhood favorites next. Don't you worry. So look forward to that and look forward to this season of Real Baseball. We are. So until next time, thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Goodbye.